Roll back that beautiful bean footage and you'll find it.
I can't hear a thing in the game. It's like, hey, there's a friend request!
Alright, this bastard is on my... Okay, GTFO, bitch.
Alright, everybody. Here it comes. Sit back and enjoy the Fraggin' and Laggin' Podcast. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Fraggin' and Laggin' Podcast. And whatever platform you're listening to it on, for me and Blaze, I want to say thank you very much. Whether it's on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, you guys are the best. And for those that are following us on Twitter, at Fraggin' and Laggin', that's where you guys can find us at. Send us a message. Say, who would you like to have on the podcast? Because right today, boys and girls, hope you're wearing your big boy panties, because we brought the heat. First of all, I want to introduce my partner in crime, my own personal fanboy, Blaze.
Wait, fanboy? Hello, everybody. How y'all doing? We brought this amazing guest. I'm really happy to have him. His name is Ark Legger, or you know him as Ark or Legger or maybe Laggy. I don't know. I'm joking.
Or if you're Ark, from France. Leger, we don't know.
Leger. Ark, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I'm really bad into introductions, so I would say, Bobby, do you have a better one?
I think that was great, honestly. That,
you know what,
that
though?
That was perfect.
What Ark wants, Ark gets. And if that's perfect, that's good enough for me. And me personally, I just want to say thank you. As soon as he said you were coming on the show, I was like, when, what time do we have to record this? So it doesn't matter. But so thank you very much. I was just going to say the man who created beautiful towns like Pleasant Valley and Cranberry, things like that. Thank you very much for being on the Fraggin' and Laggin' Podcast, Art.
Of course. Now, I will have to say, you know, while I did work as a level designer partly on H1Z1, most of the environment art and the level was created by lots of other people. I only dabbled here and there, you know, Lone Pine, maybe a little bit of corner of Residential of Pleasant Valley, things like that.
It's hitting me in the feels right now, okay? I'm sorry, hold on. Is there crying in podcasting?
So, there's like, honestly, every podcast we do and every time we talk about gaming, H1Z1 in some way or another comes up for every person we talk to. It's just crazy how much it influenced people, and it also, it's one of the reasons I met you, Ark. So yeah. I'm grateful I met you. You're a really awesome dude.
Thank you.
Appreciated you, and we always had good talks every time we met up.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens. You know, it's definitely it was a very influential game. And, you know, I really, you know, after all the smoke has cleared, mostly, I couldn't be more happy and proud to be on it and be a part of it all. It's just, you know, it's just unfortunate how it ended up.
I'm sorry, I'm crying again still.
Wait, you're still crying? Like, I'm thinking to myself, do I have to do this show on my own or something?
No,
because I'm not hearing Bobby.
This is the least I've talked, because it's like, it's, I don't know, because for me, and I know your story is so much bigger than that, but this is just my chance to connect with you, is that game changed gaming for me, period, and I just want to say thank you for the little slice of heaven you created for us out there, so, but...
Or being part of it, because like you said, there were a lot of people part of it.
A lot of people. And it had so many evolutions, you know. My favorite part of it, honestly, was the beginning. The original team, when we were creating a zombie survival game, and then we found this little Battle Royale mode. And when it launched with the Battle Royale mode and the survival game, just... so much fun was had. You could see it, and if you go to any streamer back then and look up YouTube, type in the streamer's name, type in H1Z1, mostly they'll have both. They'll have survival clips and they'll have Battle Royale clips, and it was really, really fun. Just, you know, that actually, was a really, really fun time.
That throws me back. That throws me back because I remember I was single back then, and I had this girl that I met from Sweden, and me and her were like always hanging out in Discord. And while we were in Discord, we were playing just Survive and just chilling, you know.
That's so awesome.
That's how I started on the game.
Yeah, I think like if I had to pick like favorite time period, I would say like April 2014 was when I think I first started working on it, all the way until like early 2017 was like prime couple years. I'll say up till April. So like April, so that was like 3 years, three solid good years. Just, I couldn't have had more fun on a project.
Awesome, man. Wait, Bobby, are you still crying?
Yeah. No, I'm just okay. Listening because it's like
he's in awe. No, like honestly, Ark, he's always talking, and sometimes I have to like find ways to get in between in every podcast because he's just talking, and now he's quiet. I'm like,
because
what's
that's
going wrong?
I think that's what's so unique is that we talked a little bit before we started recording it. Everybody out there is that there's so many things about Ark that we don't know about, and his career is so much bigger than one game. And to hear that story, it's like kind of I got the popcorn right here, and I just want to listen. And I want to hear your story, where it started.
Let's go.
What direction you want to go?
Man, so where do I begin?
Your diapers?
Day one. I mean,
I'll start early. I'll say that the earliest gaming memory that I have was playing my older brother's Nintendo, and I was playing Galaga, and I was like probably three years old. And that's where it all started for me, was on Nintendo. I played probably way too much. I know that there's like all kinds of screen time rules and things like that for parents, but back then, 1988, 1989, there were no rules, and I was just playing Nintendo nonstop all the time. Little did I know that all of my game playing throughout my whole life would be educational, because it would lead me to a career where I'm pulling memories, and I'm pulling from those memories all the time in the designs that I create or think about, or systems that I think about, or think about ways that something can be fun. All of the game history that I had growing up, it was all education. So I think, you know, I hope as time evolves and as more gamers become developers, you know, people start to realize that gaming is education, and playing games is a form of education. But anyways, that's where it started. I'll jump ahead to when I first moved to San Diego. I was 21, just about 22 maybe, and I didn't have anything to do. I just left a job that I was at. I just had some family issues that were happening, and I basically had like a reset button on my life. And I'll never forget sitting in my dad's office. And I just sat there and was like, what do I want to do with my life? Like, I'm 21, 22. I still have time to kind of do anything that I really want. What do I want to do? And I went down so many paths. And every single path that I went down to led me back to video games. And growing up, you don't really think about, at least in the era that I grew up in, you don't think that you can even work on games. And game developers in my era are like golden gods. They were like treated with such respect. You would never ever talk bad about a game developer. And you know, when you would beat these games on Super Nintendo or in an arcade machine or on PC, you would see all these names pop up, and they were like all Japanese, and you know, because most of the games were coming from Japan. And so in my mind, it was kind of ingrained that if I wanted to work on video games, like I have to like learn how to speak Japanese. I have to travel to Japan. I got to figure out how to become a game developer in Japan. And I didn't realize that, you know, so much has changed since you know, I was a teenager up until I was 22, and Xbox came out, and the American market started taking over, and there's been all these American studios were popping up. So I kind of was like, oh, maybe I don't have to, you know, learn Japanese and go to Japan just to become a game developer. So I did what every other person would do and went to Google and just typed in game developer. Started from there. That led me to looking up Craigslist, which led me to looking up QA tester. Now, I didn't know what a QA tester was at the time, but basically what it is, quality assurance tester, is a game tester. You're a video game tester. You play video games for a living. Now, that might sound awesome
where
at first.
Where can I sign up?
Yeah, it might sound awesome at first, but I can assure you that if you're taking the job seriously, it's really hard. And it's really mind-numbing work. But anyways, I saw a recruiter had posted something on Craigslist for Sony Online Entertainment for a QA tester. Or it wasn't, I'm sorry, it wasn't even a QA tester position. It was a GM, in-game GM for customer service. And so I called anyways, and I said, hey, I'm looking for a job in the industry. And they said, okay, come down, fill out this application. I get there, and I start filling out the application. And only then did I say, hey, by the way, I don't really want to be customer service. I'd rather be QA game tester. Do you have any positions? And it just so happened that they had one available. So they take the sheet that they handed me initially. They said, here, don't fill that one out. Fill this one out instead. And this was like the first time that I, like, this happened to me a lot throughout my career, but this is like the first time I really kind of like went, wait a minute, maybe I actually do know a lot about games. And because for my whole life, I didn't think I knew anything. I just thought, oh, I play a bunch of video games. I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm filling out this questionnaire, and it says, fill out all the games that you have played for each genre. And so imagine just like a long sheet of paper that had multiple pages, and it would have like a big box rectangle, and it would say racing, and you'd fill out all your racing games. And then it would say shooter, and then it would say RPG. And it just had like all the genres. And so I'm filling out this questionnaire, and I'm literally writing as small as I can, and I'm filling out as much as I can in each box. And there had to have been like 500 games that I put down, at least. And so I hand the paper in, and I'll never forget, the recruiter looks at it, and her eyes get big, and she's like, you've played all these games? And I was like, well, yeah, I tried to put the ones that I have beaten, you know, up towards the top. So most of the games that you see on there, I've actually beat the whole game, but then I just kind of listed ones that I've played towards the end. She's like, okay, we'll call you, we'll give you a call tomorrow. And so apparently people don't usually fill out that much, that paper that much to that extent.
So in a way, you invented the mic drop.
No,
you were ahead of your time.
Drop the mic, man.
I didn't realize it at the time, but I just thought, see, in my mind, it was like, oh, everybody plays a bunch of video games all the time. If you want to be in the industry, how could you be in the industry and not play a ton of video games? Like, later I will have learned that that is not the case. But in my head, little naive Adam was like, oh, if you want to play video games or make video games, at the very least you would have had to play video games your whole life. So I just thought it was normal. I was like, oh yeah, is that good? I don't know. I played all these games from all these different genres. If you think about it though, most people, especially today it's really bad. But if you think about most gamers today, they play like one game from one genre and they just play it over and over and over. And then maybe they'll branch out to like another shooter or like another style, like another racing game or another sports game or something. But like, they usually stay within their little bubble of the genre that they play, and that's all they play. And like, if there's anybody listening that wants to like any advice on like game development or branching out or education or anything like that, the best advice I can give is play other genres, play other games. I don't even care if it's mobile games. I don't care if it's solitaire on your computer. Like, play other things, because you learn so much about other games and other genres. I can't even begin to explain how important that is. Because if you stay too much in your lane, if you, like, just, that's all you know, and you become a specialist in that, that's great. But you might not always be working on a game like that. And so it'll become a lot harder for you to find another job.
So you guys take notes. Take notes. Don't pencil yourself in a corner.
I feel like I'm talking a lot. But anyways, I will.
That was the point that you were talking and we were listening, you know?
I was taking notes. I'll try to speed notes. It up.
No.
Because I'm still just at the very beginning.
Yeah.
That's page one, guys.
So they call.
By the way,
back.
This is episode 1 out of 25. No, I'm joking.
So they call me back, and they say, "Okay, we have an interview for you." And I go into my interview for Sony Online Entertainment, and that actually blew my mind because I had a big fanboy moment because Sony Online Entertainment, if people don't know, made EverQuest. And growing up, there was only like a few games that I played the most, and it was Diablo 2, EverQuest, and I'd go to the arcade and play Marvel vs. Capcom 2, specifically. And I played a lot of EverQuest. I played so much, and I would watch my friends play EverQuest. Like, I would go to my friend's house, and there was one computer, and he would play EverQuest and until he got tired and went to bed, and then I got to use his computer to play EverQuest on his account. So, like, I've seen a lot.
One question, did you ever put something in his drink so he would go sleep earlier or not? Because if you had to wait every time he went
look,
to sleep,
we are not
wait,
promoting
right?
knocking out your friend to get on some more quality gaming time. We're not talking
no,
about
there
that.
Was times, there was times where I was really upset because I was like, you know, I'd go over there for the weekend and he would play like all night long and I'd be like, dude, come on, let me have a turn. Which led to me finally getting my own computer and getting a job. Anyways. So I was like, Sony Online Entertainment, this is great. Oh my God, this is like dream come true. I already know a ton about this company. So I went into the interview, got hired. And the first job that I had was a QA game tester on a game called Vanguard. Not a lot of people know about Vanguard, but Vanguard was actually created by the guy who was one of the co-creators of EverQuest, Brad McQuaid. And Vanguard was really supposed to be the spiritual successor to EverQuest. So I know Sony Online Entertainment made EverQuest 2, but they made it without one of like the co-creators. So he goes to make Vanguard. Long story short, project runs out of money. SOE ends up buying the IP and takes control of it. And then that's the game that I start working on. So it was a really awesome MMO and really ahead of its time. It just ran out of funding and didn't have a really good head start. But I worked on Vanguard as QA for a while, probably like 6 or 7 months. The thing about QA is you're like a resource. You're not like on the project. You're on the project, but you're really a resource and you get moved around all the time. So in my span of working in QA for like 2.5 years, I worked on every single game that SOE had. I worked on PlanetSide 1, I worked on Star Wars Galaxies, I worked on EverQuest, EverQuest 2, Vanguard, Pirates of the Burning Sea, just basically everything. I'd be moved around as a resource to help out when you needed help. But that's probably like a solid chapter one of my game development history, you know, of how I started in the industry.
And we go over to commercial. No, I'm joking.
I'm sorry. Okay. No, I'm like literally, it's really should be a testament to the person that you are and what you've accomplished, Ark, is that we literally were messaging each other and we'd be like, I mute my mic because I'm listening, I'm taking notes. He's like, me too. So like, just know that you kind of got some fanboys on your hand here, you know.
Well, that's I I I
have appreciation of the
it's a respect thing, you know.
Yeah, respect like, to how you got there, you know. Respect to your story.
A thing about QA that I will say is there's two types of QA testers. There's the QA tester that takes like the controller in their hand because they did PS3 testing also when I was there. So there's the QA tester that kind of like takes the controller in their hand and they like kick the seat back, they put their legs up and they just play, right? And it's kind of, they're kind of just like chilling, zoning out. And then there's the QA tester that's like seat forward, face up in the monitor, like trying to find bugs, recording them, talking to the developers, trying to figure out ways to break the game. And those are the QA testers that really take the job seriously. And those are the ones that excel. And, you know, in QA, you're dealing with a lot of, you know, gamer, young kids and kids that just aren't taking it seriously. And, you know, if you ever get a job in QA, first, you should be very happy that you're in the industry because you are in the industry. And two, you should take it very seriously because it's the best way to move up.
Quick question.
Yes.
When you were a QA, how many games did you break?
Well, we would break the game constantly. So there's different levels of breaking the game. You know, traditionally in QA, there's like C bugs, B bugs, A bugs. C is usually cosmetic, not really the worst thing in the world. Oh, and each one has a classification of like low, medium, high, very high, you know. So C bugs are like cosmetic. B bugs are like gameplay related. A bugs are like you cannot play the game. Like the game either closes or crashes or locks. Or it's like an exploit that's like so bad that there's no way it should be in the game. So when you're in QA, especially working on like an MMO like Vanguard or EverQuest, there's like two cream of the crop bugs that you're trying to find all the time. One is crash bugs. If you can find a crash bug, like the developers, like it's not just finding the crash bug, because anybody can find a crash bug. They just go, oh, I crashed. And the developer goes, okay, yeah, but how did you crash? And they go, I don't know. I was like driving around and then I crashed. That's not finding a crash bug. Finding a crash bug is like, I take two steps to the left, I open my inventory, I click my mouse three times, I then close my inventory, and you crash every single time you do that. That is finding a crash bug. That's called steps to reproduce, a 100% success rate. So when you find a crash bug with 100% steps to reproduce, and you hand that to a developer, it's like literally handing them solid gold. They're just like, they're so happy that you found it, and they're so appreciative that they can just do your steps and their game crashes, and it makes it so much easier for them to fix the bug because they know exactly what to do on their end. Programmer takes those steps, they go into debug mode, they do the steps, they see exactly where the crash happens, they see exactly what caused it, they fix the bug usually that day. So that's like number one. The highest classification in my mind, especially on an MMO or any multiplayer game where there's any kind of commerce, is a dupe bug, a duplication bug, where you can take an item, duplicate it, make it two items, make it four items, make it eight items, and so on. And so those are like, you find that, you're not only just fixing a big exploit in the game, you're helping the company's bottom line, because any dupe bug that's in any multiplayer game is hurting the economy of the game, and it's costing the company money. So any QA tester that was able to find like dupe bugs or crash bugs was like really high up. Now, that being said, I was only able to ever be in the process of finding one dupe bug on Vanguard, but I found multiple crash bugs. And I think one of the key things is I was really good at being able to really specifically tell them exactly what to do and how to crash, because that was like the biggest hurdle. And you see it in games today. I'm sure there's plenty of times where you've crashed and you're like, what the heck, what just happened? Like, why did I crash? Right? But if you can go back in and then like figure out exactly how you crashed and you tell the developers that, they would just flip out. You know, that's the kind of information they're looking for.
I mean, is that like like Superman ripping your shirt open and unveiling the Superman
outfit. Oh, yeah, because it's so boring the rest of the day. The rest of the day, you're, like, running around. Like, I'll use H1Z1 as an example. Imagine that you have to work on H1Z1, and you literally have to run around the box of Destiny for 8 hours that day. You can't leave. You can't play the game. Your job is to run around in circles around the box of Destiny trying to make the game crash or trying to, like, find some problem with it. And then reporting all the bugs that you found in the box of Destiny to the developers. Like, that's just it's just boring. It's just really mundane. But, you know, there are people who take it seriously and they're like, oh, I found that at this wall, you can go through the wall and then you go outside the box of Destiny. And, you know, and that kind of stuff was just funny to us on the early days. So we just left it in. But
like, for me, it was like I was a big Modern Warfare 2 fan. Like that was my game, really, kind of thing. Was like on Favela, a map called Favela, the elevator glitch where you had to get on this one section on a box, jump up to the next box, crouch down, switch your controllers, then slightly jump up and down. You're bouncing, and boom, you're shooting up in the air. And I was like, someone discovered that and let that out there.
You still got that memorized at your age?
I know, but I'm just saying is that, and then just hearing just something like a small glitch like that where you could be up in the sky and no one could kill you. And then I'm listening to you talk about these things that you were doing, and I'm like, oh my God, okay. This is some next level stuff right here. Okay. Don't want to ever piss off Ark Linker.
So I had a lot of fun working in QA because I liked, that's just the way my mind worked, was trying to solve puzzles and trying to figure out like these problems and how to fix them. What's funny is H1Z1's a really horrible example because it was an early access game, and early access games don't really use QA a lot because it's so early. You're not at that stage where you need to make like this polished finished product because you're giving it to the players so soon. Right. So like, and then the game blew up and then it was just like always broken, which was part of the reason why I was so pissed off all the time, because they never wanted to fix it. Anyways. So
wait, can you repeat that? For you guys out there that sent out tweets to Ark about fixing his game.
Oh God, that was even worse. Okay. Was the meme. Like, okay. I got stamped with the meme of fix your game because it was so broken. And so like, I'm sitting here externally taking all this heat, and then internally at the company going to the higher ups and being like, look, all people do is yell at me all day about fix the game. Maybe we should fix the game. And they're like, okay, well, what bugs should we fix? And I'm like, here's a list of 100 bugs, fix these bugs. And they're like, well, you know, that's going to take a long time and we want to do this. So, we'll get to that, you know, when we can. And so basically they just wouldn't fix the bugs. So I'm sitting there every day.
Did you wear a t-shirt to fix the game? Maybe
I did. I actually have a fix your game t-shirt.
Really? So this is for you guys out there that tweeted Ark at some point in time. You guys are kind of assholes. You guys are assholes.
The thing is that people don't know how game development works. People don't, like, people today still to this day think that I made the whole game. Like, I made the whole game. It was everything was my decision, and I ruined and killed the game. Me alone.
Wait, don't you drive around in the Lamborghini with all the money you made?
Yeah,
no,
I mean,
yeah,
it's,
no, not.
It's
not
just like when I was talking. We were talking earlier. Is that, you know, my experience with you was up until we met at DreamHack was like you were the reason the game was struggling. This and that, and then I met you, and I'm like, within like 30 seconds, you're like, you know, I wanted to fix the game. This is what I actually do in the game. And I was like, man, I'm an asshole for even thinking that. And at that point, I was like, I respect the guy very so much more, you know, because you could have been like, F you guys, this isn't me. This isn't me.
Yeah, but, well, I'm kind of like that a little bit more now that I'm not there anymore. But, you know, at the time, I couldn't just be like, F you guys, and then they fire me. But, you know, I got fired anyway, so. Anyways,
but we're not talking
about
that.
I don't want to harp on that too much. Yeah. But I want to get into the dupe bug because this is actually really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm on Vanguard, and there's this dupe bug, and these guys, like, here's the thing about, maybe I don't want to reveal too much about how the sausage is made, but basically, if you're doing bad things in games, I'll just say this. people are watching you. Like, it's not like you have to realize that you're in somebody else's house. You know, like, you're not like, you may think you're playing the game at your computer and you're just like, oh, I'm doing all this like awful shit and ha ha ha. But like, if you're doing really awful shit, you're being watched. I can just say that. So these guilds were duping and customer service was watching them. And they're like, okay, they go over here and then like they do something here and then they have like a shit ton of items in their inventory. And we don't know how. And so basically what ended up happening is we were watching them perform the dupe and looking at their inventory and like, dude, what is going on? We don't understand what's happening. And so what ended up happening is someone, I think the VP was like really high up. I think it was like the VP of customer service ends up messaging the guild leader and was like, we've caught you duping. We know that you're doing it. If you do not tell us how to do it, we are going to basically delete your guild and never let you play the game again. Not just you, but everyone in your guild. And so it was like a total, like, stop doing this type of, you know, ultimatum. So the guild leader's like, admits guilt and is like, okay, okay, I'm sorry, we're duping, here's how you do it. And he gives us like the worst paragraph of all time. It was like all decoded of like, well, you stand here and you walk over here and then your friend clicks okay and then you click okay, like not telling us what's happening, just that's how it's said. And so I'm sitting here, every single person in QA gets the same paragraph, and so we're all like reading this paragraph and we're like trying to find this dupe bug, and no one could decode this message. Like after multiple days, finally me and another tester figured out that what was happening is, let's say it was like me and Blaze. I would take an item, I would trade with Blaze, and I would drag the item into the trade window. He would then walk across the chunk line. And what a chunk line is it's a line on the map where it loads the next chunk of space and lets you like keep moving without a loading screen. Like MMOs do this seamlessly now, but back then you would have to load the next area without having a loading screen pop up. So they would walk across the chunk line, and then they would have to be in a chunk where their guild house is. They would then go inside their guild house, take the item that they have in their inventory. Now, meanwhile, the trade window is still up. Place an item on the floor in their guild house, then hit accept trade. And at the same time, I would have to hit cancel trade. So what happens is I cancel the trade, I get the item back, he hits accept trade. He then gets the item that's on the ground turned into the item that was supposed to be traded to him and the item that's on the ground. And so that's what they were doing all day long. And they were taking like the most expensive item in the game and just duping it. And when we found it, it was like national treasure, finding like the lost city of gold. Like, it was so, everyone was like freaking out. It was so awesome. It was such an experience. I'll never forget it.
I mean, those steps though, you're just like, someone actually discovered that. You
someone
see
figured
I'm,
that out. That's what's crazy
like,
about it.
Oh, guess what? You could do this, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this.
And it was
such
an easy fix. The fix was, if somebody walks further than like 10 meters from a trade, to close the trade window. That's all the, and it fixed the problem. That was the only problem, is that you could keep the trade window open and like run super far away from the person.
So please tell me that like when you guys fixed the bug, that you were watching people still try to do it.
No, this is the thing is that there was a very, very small amount of people that knew how to do it. It was one guild and it was just like a few people in that guild that were doing it.
I would have been like, oh, by the BT dubs, we fixed it. You know. So, I mean, I always liked it when, like, I'm not saying that, you know, like you were saying, is that when you're doing things wrong in a game that there's people watching, is that I always liked it when you would see those people get banned online, like, if they were streaming that game and they were doing, like, hey, I'm just doing this, blah, 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 and then they would be like, oh, by the way, we're watching, and your account is banned, boom, and they're just like, and, like, mid-stream, they're like, what's going on?
People forget that it's people's jobs, literally, to watch the game all day long. they're called, it's customer service GMs. They're in-game GMs. GMs means like, you know, game master for old school tech. But like, basically, if you work on an MMO, or if you play an MMO, there's people who their entire job is to just log into the game and just be helpful to people and do customer service and just watch the game all day long, right? So it's like, it was a little harder in H1Z1 because you didn't have open world persistence. You had like 150 player matches that then closed when it was over. So people could only join games that were open, and then, you know, you couldn't see all the games because there were so many 150 player games spread across all the continents all the time. But, you know, it was still happening. People were still like in games watching the games.
Yeah, Lord knows no one ever caught me cheating because I was really bad, but it was so addicting. I mean, it's back to like what you were saying, is that it's just that, you know, everyone says game development, design, this and that, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's easy. And then, you know, you just listen to it. It's like that, you know, as you know, as you were saying, you're sitting there and you're purposely trying to find ways to literally break the game and then fix it.
Yep. It's like taking something apart, putting it back, taking something that's broken apart completely, putting it back together so that it's fixed.
It's actually a game within a game, right? Like the game was to find the bug.
Yep. And there are probably people out there listening to this that are like, man, I'd be really good at that. Well, you probably would. There's a lot of people that really like doing that in games where they try to figure out exploits and they try to figure out. That's why in my opinion, on my philosophy on exploits is the person who finds the exploit isn't the problem. They're actually helping you. It's the people who copy the person who found all the exploits that are the problem. But the person who actually found the exploit should like get paid by the company. Like, here's $500. Thank you so much for finding this problem that we can now fix and make the game better.
Well, especially nowadays where like in-game currency is like, you know, everything. You could be like, yeah, you know, it's great to throw some money at people, but then there's people that are like, I just want us to fix this. Please stop doing it. Oh, here's some in-game currency, or, you know, some ultimate new skin that no one will ever have except for you, you know?
Yeah. So. The problem with that, I will say that the problem with giving out a skin for doing something like cool in the game is you will have recruited an army of people that continually ask you for things to find that qualify as like, I fixed something. Can I have that skin?
Yeah, I can imagine that actually.
Yeah. So if there was like, imagine there was like a gold t-shirt that was like, I fixed it. Right. But the only way that you could get it is you had to find like a hole in the ground. Right. So it works. There's no more holes in the ground. Nobody can fall through the map anymore. But then now all those people that found that shirt are like constantly going, okay, what else? Tell me something else. What else? And we're like, oh, well, I don't know. And then everyone in the whole, like everyone's like, okay, well, how do I get this shirt? Okay, well, this guy did this and I did this and that's technically an exploit fix. Can I have that shirt? And so you end up creating more work for you. it actually becomes like a double-headed snake issue where you're creating more problems.
I always hated, like, I guess I was just a douchebag gamer because as a casual gamer, like, you would, like, one game that to me was really broken was this game called Advanced Warfare. But there was always these wall glitches where if you went to this right corner and you crouched, you could walk inside and they couldn't shoot in, but you could shoot out. And I'm like, oh, it's an easy fix. Just put a wall there or something so they can't do it. But it was one of those that the way the game was designed, they could not fix it. And it was there for the entirety of the game. I'm just like,
that's the other thing, that the engine has limitations and there are certain bugs where it's like, they need to like fix the engine, and that's a huge fix. It's not just like putting a wall down. It's like they have to fix a major thing in the code. And you know, H1Z1 had definitely problems with that. The engine wasn't flawless. It was a MMO engine that got turned into a MMO FPS game that got turned into a survival game that got turned into a battle royale game. So it's like, yeah, the game had its problems.
So you gamers out there, it's not just as easy as putting a wall up to fix a glitch.
No, definitely not.
Take it easy on your local developers and designers.
Yeah, that was another thing. I want to reiterate that part because that always blew my mind. Part of my journey of things that blew my mind. One of them being people finding out people don't really play as many games as you think they do. Second one being the way people treat developers. Like, I still can't believe it. Like, maybe it was just me, but like, I grew up like idolizing these guys. Like, I would be like, oh my god, you made Super Mario World, or like, oh my god, you worked on like GoldenEye. Like, that I would never ever say anything bad to somebody like that. So like, to be in this world where it's just like constant berating and hate and like, you suck and you're the worst, and like, it just was like crazy to me.
This is
like,
your
man,
fault,
like,
the game died, this is your fault.
Yeah, it's just like, that's not how I grew up. I'd be so like, it was just like, no, it's yeah. just it's just so, still to this day, still like super
so,
blows my
so
mind.
So you guys
anytime.
Should be respecting your devs out there and name your firstborn kids after your favorite devs in the game.
Oh, I'm
like.
Not saying that. I'm just saying that, like, I maybe it's just me, but I grew up definitely respecting developers a lot more.
Well, I guess it's that you've seen, it's like maybe at an early age you realized what you wanted to do, and you were going to do whatever you could in your power to get to where you wanted to go, you know? Like, you had that vision that, you know, like, how many people when they fill out a job application back then said, oh, by the way, I played like 500 games, you know? And, you know, the first 499 I beat, the only reason why I didn't beat, you know, number 500 is because I broke the disc or something. I didn't like buying it or something, you know? So, I mean, it just shows that how much more, I mean, I respected you, but listen to your story. I respect you even more now because it just shows that there's perseverance. I mean, a whole community hated you, and it wasn't even your fault, and yet you still smiled, you know?
Yeah, it was definitely – there was definitely moments like, it was hard. It was definitely hard for sure. But, like, you know, that's not – I mean, I was raised to persevere. You know, I was raised with – you know, my mom would instill these like messages in me growing up about like how you should never give up, and like, you know, basically just those are the things that stuck with me, where it's like, you know, what am I going to do? Just like give up and quit and just like go away and hide. And, you know, it's just like, that's just not who I am, you know? So it's,
you know,
like
start like a camp or something like that for crocheting or something. No. So, yeah. So what I know, like I said, for us, you created something that had a big impact on us, but you, to me, are bigger than that game. And how about we just push right past that game, if it's okay with you, and let's talk about what happened to you post that game.
Well, do you want to go there, or do you want me to go beyond QA? Because I don't know if you want me to tell a whole story, but see, for me, it's like I know the story, so I don't want to hear it.
Oh, I mean, no, it's, you know what? I mean, it just shows that, I mean, obviously, to me, you went from QA.
Yeah, the fast version, I'll speed it up. Basically.
What is it called? What is that thing called? Oh, God, I don't know if they have it
Reader's
over there.
Reader's Digest?
No, Cliff Notes, the Cliff Notes version.
The Cliff Notes version.
Yeah, we're going with the Cliff Notes.
I just aged myself by saying Reader's Digest. So the Cliff Notes version is I became an apprentice. I went into design. I then became a full-time designer. But I will say this, there's many steps. I came in as a QA tester. There's QA tester one, which is like the number one tester on that project. There's assistant lead QA tester. There's QA tester lead. And I went through each step to get to that. I actually QA leaded a project called Kung Fu Hustle that was only released in Taiwan, that Sony Online made. You can look it up. Sony Online Kung Fu Hustle. And I was the QA lead of that project. Then I went over to apprentice design and worked my way up all the design levels. Apprentice designer, assistant designer, associate designer, game designer 2, senior game designer. Some companies have game designer 3, but this company just went game designer 2 to senior game designer, lead game designer, creative director. So I started just not knowing anything, and on my knowledge of gaming and adapting and learning every single day on the job alone, worked my way up, and a lot of hard work, worked my way up all the way to the top of design. So that's something that I'm very proud of, and something that kind of goes to show whenever you hear this, you hear this all the time in every industry, but whenever you hear somebody say, you know, it takes a lot of hard work and you just got to put your mind to it, it's really true. it, like, you really have to care about what you're doing. You have to, and it's going to be really hard, but you will come out the other end so much more experienced, so much more better, and just like it'll be all be worth it.
There you guys go. That's the Cliff Note versions of where you, where he went, how he got there, and he's telling you what to do. So
it's up to you, basically. And the and when I mean, like, it's hard work, there's also sacrifices too. Like, a lot of people can't make the sacrifice, unfortunately, because it may be later in their life, they have kids, they have responsibilities. But if you are listening to this and you are not married, you don't have kids,
Hi, everybody. It's me, Bobby, from the Fraggin' and Laggin' podcast.
Hold on a minute. Why is it always you doing the intro? It's my time now. Guys, if you ever wondered what peripherals we're using while we're doing this podcast, while we're gaming, while we're having fun, while we're actually fragging, we're using XtraFi. If you want to check them out, it's XtraFi.com. If you want to check a local store near you or an online store, XtraFi.com/resellers. Go and check it out. I gotta say, I've been using the super lightweight mouse for a year now. It's amazing. It improved my aim and it improved my gaming. And I had them send over some stuff to Bobby to test out. What did you think about it, Bobby?
I'm gonna tell you, I've been using the one specific mouse for like 2 years. And the fine people at XtraFi sent me this awesome RGB mouse, the M4. And it's super lightweight. It took me like a little bit to get used to it, and I'm never going to use anything else. I mean, it's so simple to change my DPI. The polling on it is simple, and not only that, I got some H1 Ninja Gym in Pajamas inspired headphones in the mail today, and I love them 100%. So, you guys,
yeah, guys, as you can hear, headsets, keyboards, mice, mouse pads. Accessories.
Let me ask you this.
What
are you? I noticed that you said you wanted a mouse bungee for Christmas this year. Well, guess what? XtraFi's got you covered. 100%.
Oh, awesome, man.
You guys go to XtraFi.com or XtraFi.com/resellers. They sell all over the world, Asia, NA, Europe. They got you covered. So, you guys, check it out. Tell them the guys from the Frag and Laggin podcast send them your way. And just keep in mind, if you guys are out there, you better be fragging, because if not,
you're probably not using XtraFi gear.
Incoming message.
Hey, what's going on? This is Filey 1337 giving a big shout out to Fraggin' and Laggin'. Yo, Joaquim, brother Bobby. Thank you so much for that opportunity the other day. That was amazing. I heard a little rumor that you're going to have the man, the myth, the legend, Ark Lager. I just had a little message I wanted to leave, you know. Hey, Ark Lager, fix your game, pal. Nah, jokes aside, man, you were a legend. Love the work you did on that game. Much love and respect. Who loved you? Ew!
Yo, guys, it's the real Meister Righty Boys. Great podcast. Absolutely loved the last episode with... And I'm very happy that I also got a gifted a sub on his channel, by the way. Just saying. And on American Dad's channel. I'm going to make more of these videos each when you release a new podcast. Let's go. Well, I have one more thing to say, guys. Readly out. Hell yeah. Readly out. Readly out.
Basically... can go no wherever obligation. You want. Like, go. Like, if you're listening to this from Belgium and you want to work in New York or Seattle, you might just have to go there, and you might just have to just commit, and you know, you have to go and move, and that's a sacrifice you might have to make. And but if you want it bad enough, you will do it. You'll go and you'll move. You'll go to where you need to go to do what you want to do. And so if you have that freedom of movement, I think that's like one of the most important things to realize that you have, and just go and do it. Cause otherwise you're going to be 35 one day and you're going to be like, shit, I can't just leave. I have a family. I can't just like go. And some people still have to like move their family, and like they get a job opportunity and they have to move their entire family and uproot their whole life. And at that point, it becomes much harder to make that decision. So just remember, you know, if you really want something and you really want to go do it, the best thing you can do is just go do it. Don't let where you live limit what you want to do.
Success is a mindset. I firmly believe that.
Totally.
So, Blaze, if you want to become to, you know, the U.S. and become a big time streamer, you know, you're the only person holding yourself back.
Well, I actually got a family. You know that.
Bring your family.
It's much harder for Blaze.
I honestly have to say, I have grandkids. Yeah, you have grandkids. That's even. But like my prime time in streaming was in between my current girlfriend and my kid and my previous marriage. That was my prime time in streaming because the only thing I had to do was work and make some money and stream. That was it. So kind of true, you know, when you have time, when you have nothing, like no obligations, nothing holding you back or whatever, you can do things way more easily, of course.
Yeah. Life only gets, I don't want to say harder, but life only gets a little more complicated, right? You're just going to keep leveling up. And when you level up, there's more stuff you got to keep track of. So that's how life works too.
True. I kind of have a question before we go proceed on to, I've been wanting to ask you this question since you'd agreed to do this. What game of all the games out there from the dawn of time that if you could put your stamp on it, you wish you could have?
Oh my God. This is easy for me. This is like slam dunk. I wish I could have been on both of these projects. I wish I could have been on Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy VII Remake. Those games, like even the remake kind of changed my life, but like the original game literally changed my life. Like that game made it cemented in my mind. I love video games and I will love them forever. Like that was the game. It was just, do you know the story about Star Wars where they did Star Wars and they filmed the whole thing and then they didn't have John Williams yet and they watched the movie and they're like, this movie's awful. And then like last second they got John Williams and he scored the soundtrack and they watched it and they're like, oh my God, this is like the best
movie
ever.
Become a classic, yes.
Yeah. Final Fantasy VII's that way, in my mind. Like, Final Fantasy VII, if you play that game with no sound, you're kind of like, it's kind of rough around the edges. Like, it's cool, I guess. It's cool cutscenes and stuff like that. But when you turn that volume up and you play that game, like, the whole game through, it's an experience, and the music, like, carries that game. Still to this day.
Oh my God. I mean, I don't know. I mean, since I've never been in your shoes, I guess if I'm looking for something for me personally, because and I've told this story before, like when I got into gaming, I mean, I was the arcade person and I played Galaga in the arcade and like Miss Pac-Man and stuff like that, Track and Field, Donkey Kong. But I got really into gaming because it was my way to connect with my sons. And then it became an addiction. And I was always a, like, FPS battle royale person, and I think if there was a game that I could get, I wish I would have got into and learned the development of it, because it's something completely out of the norm, probably Black Desert Online. I played that game.
Nice.
And I looked at it and was like 12 hours later I was like, what happened? What's going on here? Why do I not have any, you know, my shoes, where's my shoe, you know? I just, because I mean, from a FPS battle royale fan, I've never played games like Black Desert Online.
Yeah.
And
everyone has their first, right? Their first like MMO experience, right? And so you had yours much later. It was Black Desert.
Yeah.
And which so is like a ton of people had theirs be WoW, right? World of Warcraft. Yeah. And for me, it was EverQuest.
I've never played WoW in my life, to be honest.
But what was your first MMO, Blaze?
I'm trying to think like the game that I like played like crazy and always played was just FIFA. I've played every, like, from day one that it came out, every FIFA I played.
So have you never played an MMO?
I don't. What's the one with all the tanks and everything, and what's it called?
I mean, like a fantasy RPG.
I don't think,
MMO.
Yeah.
No.
So, like, WoW, Black Desert Online.
Yeah, so you don't even know what we're talking about. This is what's crazy. You should load up Final Fantasy 14 or something and, like, play, like, a good MMO.
Oh, but I wait. If I played Final Fantasy, the one that you were talking about, I've played that one.
Okay, that's not an MMO. It's not totally different.
See,
totally different.
I'm a noob. I'm telling you.
I totally see what you're talking about with Black Desert Online, especially if that's the first MMO you've
never.
For me, that's
never played something like that before.
Because you just get lost in the world. You get lost in there are so many things you can do in an MMO. It's not just like leveling
up.
So
it's like
endless. Everything about it is just so in depth. Yeah, it's endless. That's the point, right? The point is.
Would you consider Skyrim? Skyrim.
Skyrim's an RPG, and it's still it's up to that level, like kind of like The Witcher and stuff like that, where there's just so much content.
I will tell you
it's not an MMO. You don't get that feeling of
for me, 12 hours went by, and I realized I hadn't eaten anything. I had barely drinking anything, and the sun was going. It was dark, and I was like, "What happened?
Yep, that's an MMO for you.
You know?"
That's
and I'm
classic.
Like, because I coming from a console jockey that played Call of Duty to going over to PC and playing H1, and then just trying to find something different. And I could kind of see what you're saying in the beginning is that it's never good as a gamer to pencil yourself in a corner, because that is like kind of my like thing that I've done wrong in my gaming career, is that I penciled myself in that corner. And when I discovered that, I was like,
it's funny, because it's imagine only watching one genre of movie your whole life. Like, imagine if you've never watched a sci-fi movie. You only ever watched action movies. And people who watch drama and sci-fi and comedy and like everything are like, dude, you're missing out. Like, how have you never watched these other movies? It's the same thing for games. Game genres are also different, and they all feel very different, and there's so much to be learned from all of them. Anyways, you asked me a question, and I totally forgot what it was. It was a while back. You wanted to hear me talk about post H1Z1.
Oh yeah, post after H1, the game, you know,
life
after H1.
There was much healing to be had. That would be the first thing that I say. It was rough. I think anybody who had worked on H1Z1, I could probably safely say, has felt the same way, where it's like you were so low and you were so down that it took a while to kind of like feel normal again, and then you like realized how awful like the space you were in was, like how toxic and bad and like depressing it was to be on that game for those years when it was just like going downhill. So like there was a lot of like
just, it's like the train wreck pretty much.
Yeah, it was just,
you can't
just,
look. You can't look away.
Well,
but
it
you know
was
it's
more
coming.
Like it was more like you just woke up and you had to go to this place every day where it was just awful. Like it was just like things were going bad, and nobody liked your game, and everybody yelled at you all day, and just like I'm talking about just like not people at the company, but like just it just was an awful environment. It was not healthy. And when you finally step away from that environment and you finally realize like, oh, there's more to life than just this game, you start to heal. You start to realize like things are actually not so bad. So that's the first thing that happened, was there was just this time period of healing. And then I had a child, my firstborn child. He's like my everything, and he changed my life for so many, in so many good ways. And I now am working on two projects at the same time. So I work in San Diego, and I work full time for a company called Protag Studios, or Protagonist Games. And that is ran by Anthony Castoro. He's the CEO. Castoro Gamer. Some people might know him. Anthony Castoro had a stint on H1Z1 as the general manager.
Yep. I had many talks with him. It's a really awesome dude. On
I met both. Really that's awesome where I met both you guys.
Yeah.
At Atlanta.
And with as many stories that I have about H1Z1, he has 10 more that are probably just as bad because he was towards the top. And so he would hear from me all day about all the bad things. And then he would have to go into the room where it happens and, you know, come back and have to tell me the bad news about what's going on. So he gets a lot of flack too, but I can safely say that he was definitely being told what to do. It wasn't a democracy. So I work for him full time and we're working on a project that we can't talk about because it's really early and we don't want to give away what we're doing because we feel like what we're doing is really special. And it's not just Survive. I have to say that I still get messages every day like bring back Just Survive, save Just Survive. And I really, really wish I could. I would have to actually buy the rights to Just Survive from Daybreak, which I do not have that kind of money. And nobody owns it but Daybreak. So anybody who used to work on it, who doesn't work on it anymore, we can't bring it back. It is owned 100% by Daybreak. They're in charge of whatever happens to that game. So we're not making that game. Just have to say that. But we are making something cool. And I do that during the day. At night, I advise really for a blockchain company. Well, it's really a technology company, but we're working on a blockchain-based video game, and it is a reimagining of Pogs. I don't know if you guys remember. Did you guys ever play Pogs?
It's like that's the little
milk caps. You'd throw a slammer on them.
Yeah.
So
we got them in the chips, you know,
like right. So
Smiths and Crockett chips. We got them in my country, you know. We call them actually flippos in Belgium.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's what I've learned is a bunch of different countries call them different things. Well, in America, we call them Pogs.
I had a whole collection as a little guy. Well, not a little guy, but a teenager, I would say.
So we're working on a game called Cogs with a K, K-O-G-S, and it's basically a digital version of Pogs where you buy these collectibles and then you can go stack them up and play against another person and slam and flip over the Pog or the Cogs, and you can either play for fun or play for keeps, where every single one you flip over you actually keep. And what makes it interesting is it's using blockchain technology, so that means that every single thing that happens on the blockchain as a transaction. So it keeps track of everything that happens, it knows who owns what, and because it's a digital item on the blockchain, you can take it off the game. And that's really like the main reason why we're doing this. The technology to be able to do things like that. If you play Fortnite and you spend $1,000 in V-Bucks on your skins in Fortnite, and one day everyone decides to stop playing Fortnite, you have a bunch of worthless skins that you can't even trade or sell, even if you wanted to. And there are people out there that wish they could take their items off of Fortnite and trade it. You put it on a USB stick, sell it, right? And then what if you could do that and then take those skins and put them in another game and upload it, right? That would be interoperability between two games and blockchains talking together. And so what we're trying to push forward is this idea of skins don't have to end on the game that you get them on. They can be these digital items that you keep forever, right? Like, think of Pokemon cards. Maybe not as many people play Pokemon anymore, but if you have a foil Charizard first edition, that's always going to be worth something. Even if tomorrow everybody stopped playing Pokemon, that Charizard you could still sell because it's a physical item that you own. But there's no digital version of that yet. There's no like digital version of I get to this really cool item that I get to take with me and move around and just keep on my digital life for the rest of my life. And so that's what blockchain does with gaming and these digital items. And, you know, I believe that it is going to be the future of items and the future of skins.
That is an awesome. If you think about that, I mean, wow.
Can I shout out the website to pre-register on Art?
Yeah,
because I'm actually
yeah.
pre-registered.
Oh, perfect. Yeah,
it's so wax.cogs.gg, if I'm right.
Yeah, wax.cogs, KOGS.gg.
Get in there, guys.
So you can pre-register now. We're going to give away 25 limited edition cogs to random people who pre-register.
What did I need to do to get one, Ark? Do I need to send you some chocolate or some beers from Belgium?
Yeah,
or...
I need some Belgian chocolate. No, there's going to be no favoritism. But we're going
to
do our pre-register.
I tried.
He wouldn't be Blaze if he wasn't asking.
That's true.
Skins.
Yeah,
was I known that way in H1 maybe?
Oh yeah, you were. I was like, oh god, here he comes. I gotta have
I call
a skin
him the
for
diva.
Him. If I don't give him a skin, he won't leave me alone.
That's why I call him the diva. He's always about me. What can you do for me?
Did I tell you I love you, Bobby?
No, you did not today. But thanks.
So that's, you know, what I'm doing post H1Z1. It's a lot of work. But I wouldn't have it any other way. I'm conditioned to work hard and do a lot of things at once. So,
well, I think you nailed it. I think really, like for me, I mean, we're both fathers. We're all fathers. It's like, I think like once like my kids were born, it actually taught me how to breathe. If that makes sense, like everyday life is like you're like go, and like sometimes like you're especially when you're like your mind is racing all the time. Like, you don't know actually how to stop and breathe. And, you know, like, I remember the first time I held my sons, you know, when they were babies, and I was like, okay, it all makes sense now.
Yeah, uh-huh. Fatherhood is like, talk about a level up, like, in life. It's, I don't even remember what it was like before I had kids. Like, I just felt like that was such a different world and universe. It's so crazy because here's the best way I can explain it. You know how this is for people out there who don't have any kids yet. You know how like when you wake up and you're having like a bad day and you're like, you don't feel good and you're like, oh, I'm supposed to do this thing. I don't really want to do this thing. Oh my God. And you're just like having the worst day. And then you don't know where to eat and I don't have enough money to eat there. I guess you know, that sucks. Those are bad days. Okay, now imagine that, but you have to make sure somebody doesn't die, like, the whole day. Like, you wake up and you're like, oh, I don't feel good. And then you're like, oh, wait a minute. It doesn't matter if I don't feel good because I have to go make sure this kid doesn't die. And so yeah, I have to, like, feed him and change him.
Check
and,
his
like,
diaper. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it's such a different world because it's, like, all those things that I cared about when I was like, oh, I just
they're
don't
trivial.
Wanna...
It's all fucking trivial.
It's like it's so doesn't matter at all, and you don't realize that until you have a kid. And then when you have like some time for yourself because the kid goes to sleep, you get so much done because you're like, okay, the kid's asleep. Oh my God, I have both my hands and I can do whatever I want now. Where before you had a kid, you're like, I don't know what I want to do. I don't know. This is hard. I don't know what I should have. You know what I mean? I don't feel good. Or like. It's like, that's the best way I can explain it. So
exactly, when you have someone literally depending on you, it's a game
everything.
Changer, and it's a good pressure to have. You think, like, oh my God, I have that paper due, or you know, what am I going to do? And you're just like, you said, when you
anything.
Wake up, you're like,
oh, I got to go to the DMV. Oh, I have to like make sure that I do my taxes. Oh, I have to.
Oh,
like...
I have to wear a mask when I go inside the store.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
oh
you know.
My God, I got to go back to the car and put my mask on. Oh, it's like no, it's like. Imagine all those things except also making sure this cup doesn't fall and shatter into a million pieces.
Well, and not only that, you were and like and you look at it, you were ahead of a firm believer in like the cryptocurrency and stuff too. I mean, you're like a renaissance man to an extent, you know. I mean, please tell me you got out when the going was good though.
So I'm still like I'm a holder. I don't really like to trade or sell or anything like that. Like I've had times where I've had to sell just because I needed funds, especially after I got laid off. I like to just collect, you know, just try to accumulate because in my mind, I don't even think we've gotten even touched the surface yet. you know, at the time of this recording, let's see. Let's just look up Bitcoin, 9,692, right? I think that that, in my opinion, will be something that's small when you look at it 10 years from now, 15 years from now, long term. You know, we'll be looking back and going, oh my God, Bitcoin under $10,000 for one coin? That's insane. Mm.
Most people have looked at cryptocurrency like something that's a way to make short-term money. And
yeah, it was like kind of cliche. Whereas
Wall Street, you know,
it's, yeah, people
it's
got
better
into
than Wall Street. You can get rich in a few days, by matter of speaking.
Yeah, I mean, people got in to make a quick little crypto coin, you know, so to speak, and then got out. And then, you know, you look at it for, you know, I'm not looking at something for tomorrow. I'm looking at for something for, you know, my child's graduation. And
yeah,
so
it really is going to be like that, though, because it comes down to this is the easiest way I can explain it. Money in every single economy has money that's paper that they can print. And there's inflation each time they print more money, right? You print more money, there's more of it in your country. The price devalues because there's more of it. But if you only have a finite number of something, right? And so gold is a good example. When Earth, however you believe Earth was created, when Earth was created, there's a finite amount of Earth on this planet. There's only so much. And each time more of it gets mined from the ground, there's less of it available. And so that means gold goes up over time. Right? And 100 years from now, gold will be worth even more because there will be most of it mined out of the ground and there won't be any left except for what people own. And you'll have to, in order to get gold, you'll have to pay a lot of money for it. That's basically what Bitcoin is. That's basically what a lot of these cryptocurrencies are, is there's only a finite set amount and it's being mined digitally. And over time, it's going to be harder to get and acquire, and that should just make the price go up. It sounds simple. I mean, it's not that simple, but that's the best way I can explain it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember like when I was sitting there talking to Rethink, and he'd ask me all the time, "Are you getting in? You getting in?" And I was like, "Man, I don't know, man. It just, I guess I wasn't a believer, you know."
Well, and, yeah, and it still know. Could. It still look. There's nothing that's a sure bet. We could wake up tomorrow and all of the world governments could say, we are creating our own Bitcoin and Bitcoin's banned. And if you use it, you go to jail, right? Which would be like the disaster scenario for Bitcoin. It would tank, right? And it wouldn't go to zero, but it would tank and it would go really low. And most people would lose a lot of money on Bitcoin. There's nothing saying that that's not going to happen. That could totally happen. I could see a world where that happens, where every country has their own version of Bitcoin and you have to trade it just like you trade currencies. But the reason why Bitcoin is so powerful is because it's a global currency. When you go from America to Australia, you don't have to exchange it for different currencies. It's just accepted where people accept it. And it's just a one global currency. And so that to me is what makes it special, is that all of these countries, maybe the superpowers won't adopt it right away, but all of these third world countries and all of these other countries that are not quite a superpower, in my opinion, are going to adopt it and it's going to be accepted. And all those countries where it's accepted, it's going to make the price go up because it's going to be valuable.
Well, there you guys go.
I'm in my wallet buying more Bitcoin, by the way.
can you
this is not financial advice. If you know you listen to this podcast and you go broke, that's your fault.
Yeah.
Of course, always, I say.
But we definitely went over the time. But I honestly don't. I messaged Blaze and I was like, dude, I don't care. Just let him go, because it's just, that's why I like the premise of this podcast, because no one. Not a lot of people know your story, and like for me, I just wanted to sit back and be like, I'll interject
like
a little bit here and there.
In the end, you know?
But I was like, you're getting awe. I was like, oh man, I never thought of it like that, you know. And and you know, as a father, you know, I can, when you say things about like that, I'm just like, you know what? Yeah, he's right. And the fact is, like, that
The thing about being a father that I also wanted to drop in there, sometimes I'm like, I don't know, I had a bad day or whatever, and I come home, or I had a bad stream, or I'm raging because of a game. I go downstairs and I see my kid like downstairs, like he's 2.5 now. He's like walking around and he picks up like a ball or a cube or a pen and he goes like, wow. He starts doing whatever with it and trying it out and failing and you know, whatever. And I'm like, he's so happy with that one little piece that's in my eyes, not important, non-existent, you know?
Yeah, it's like...
And you, I don't know if it's a good word in English, but you...
No,
in
it's...
In French, they say relativé. You like, look at things from a different perspective suddenly, you know? You're like, why am I raging? Why am I complaining? Why? Like, there's so much more around everything else, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like the human condition of, like, being comfortable and getting complacent and, like, things that aren't... that used to be awesome aren't awesome anymore, and having a kid just refreshes all of that. It's like it's such a cool restart on like being able to like experience life again.
Yeah, it's like, it's a nice perspective kick in the, you know what?
Yeah,
you're like, oh my gosh, you know, I need the new iPhone, I'm blah blah blah, I'm gonna lose my, you know, I'm gonna lose my shit if I don't get it. And then you're just like, or like I always said, like much like what Blaze was saying, is that like you could have the worst day, like it poured down outside, you didn't have an umbrella, you're soaked from head to toe, you're upset, you've dropped everything, you know, you're at your wit's end, then you see your kid and you're like, it makes sense now. You know, that smile is all it takes, you know. So
yeah, that smile, that's it.
I don't know. It's amazing. We started talking about games, and we ended up talking about our kids. So,
I wouldn't,
you know,
want it any other way.
Exactly. I'm not happy. I am very happy.
I'm totally in that camp of, you know, people should have kids, right? Even though it's really hard. I am just such what's the word? I'm having a brain fart. Pro, not pro choice. Not pro life. Not political. I'm not getting political.
Oh,
here.
Yeah, we don't do politics.
Yeah.
I
think that if people are on the fence about whether they should or should not, 100% of the time you should.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's
easily.
All I'll say.
If
that's
you
all
are not sure, yeah, I agree with you. If you're not sure, here's the deal. You can
You're
read every book
out.
In the world about parenthood, what you can expect, and there is no book that is written that can define parenthood until you hold your kid for the first time.
It's like, to bring it back to gaming, it's like playing a huge piece of DLC and like never playing it. It's like we're all playing this game of life, and if you don't have a kid, you're literally like either not playing the sequel to like one of the best games ever made, or you're not playing like the biggest DLC that most of the people who play the game have been playing, and you're just completely missing out on it. And you're just always going to just play this one version, and you don't unlock that DLC or that new map until you have a kid. Like that's basically what it is.
That is like the perfect analogy, you know. You're just like, I could watch Ark play a game and then think I know what Ark is doing, and then I play the game and I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
Oh my
here?
God, like imagine, you know how everyone has their favorite streamer to watch, right? Like
my,
I can't
mine
I
is
can't,
Blaze.
Yeah, I can't. mine too. Yeah, every night I make sure that I'm donating 25 subs every time.
Well, I don't need that. I just need people in chat talking to me. That's all I want.
But like it's funny to think about. Okay, I have favorite streamers, but I cannot wait to watch my own kid play a video game. Like that's my streamer that I want to watch. I want to watch him play a game.
Like it's I looked at my grandson and he's playing Minecraft on the tablet, and I'm like. And I'm watching him do these things, and I was like, when I was his age, I was upset that I didn't get a new set pack of baseball cards, and I dropped, like, opened it up, and the gum fell on the ground. And trust me, I ate the gum, believe me.
Oh, we all ate the gum.
But
we all have the hard, for me, it was when I gross gum.
My gosh.
But like when I see my kid walking into my stream/game room and he like crawls into the seat and he like starts biting the mic or whatever and tapping the keys or pulling them out of my keyboard and throwing my mouse around, I'm like feeling proud, you know? I'm like, damn, he's gonna be a gamer, you know? And my girlfriend goes like, oh no, I got a second one. What the hell? What am I starting?
He's gotta hand off the dynasty. So, I first and foremost, from me personally, I have so much respect for you, the things that you've done, the things that you're going to do, and thank you for coming on and being a part of the Frag and the Laggin podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much. I love doing stuff like this. I was happy when Blaze messaged me and was like, hey, you want to be on? I was like, sure.
You don't even know what my reaction was. There was
I wrote to Bobby, like, Bobby, I'm going to write Ark. He's probably going to say no, but I'm just going to put on my bad boy shoes and block, see what he says, you know. Him. Yeah, well, and then you answered me, and I was like, damn, he's you know, making some time for our little tiny, soon-to-be hugest podcast in the world.
Best,
you know?
Kept secret. Here's the thing that I've learned in life, and I've learned it from a couple of people that I hold near and dear to my heart. One of them is CDN the Third. CDN the Third told me this, and it's never been more true, especially today, and it's, be careful who you step on your way to the top of the mountain, because you never know who you're going to meet on your way back down. And it happened.
Wait, wrong source. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And you kind of just see in today's market, people that are failing that right now, people that are kind of like,
they're
too good
picture,
for you.
Yeah.
They're too good for you, or they're too big now, or whatever. And it's so funny because when I see that, like, I've already been through that on a smaller, much smaller scale, but I've already been through that, like, peak and valley of, like, you go up to the top and you're the best and everyone plays your game, and then you go down and nobody cares about you. And it's so true. It's like, there's no room for any ego or anything like that. It doesn't matter whose podcast it is or how famous they are or whatever. It's just, you look at it as an opportunity that somebody actually wants to talk to you. And that's all that matters. You know, it's just...
Yeah,
that's just the truth of it.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I've heard that before, and it's the truth. And watch how you treat people, because when you're falling down, you never know who's gonna, you know, when you put your hand out there, who's gonna like not catch you on the way down. So.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, go ahead and take a couple seconds. Shout out the. Anything and everything you want the people to be checking out.
All the
out.
Websites you want us
all
to
the websites.
Check
well,
out.
And we're going
to
put you guys, all these websites that he's going to talk about, we are going to have that in the description below. So you guys, please don't hesitate to check it out and show some support for everything he's doing, because he's not only he's a hell of a guy. Obviously, you guys can read his How to Be a Great Dad book that isn't published yet. So...
Maybe I should write a book one day.
You
about
should write
everything.
Books.
I don't know. So see, for me, it's like, in my mind, I'm like, nobody wants to read that. Who cares? I'm just the dude that just lived. In everyone has their
Wait,
own unique.
Why don't we make the
arc
like a video game about it? You know, people want to play the video games. You know?
Look, we had Leisure Suit Larry. Why
yeah,
can't we
there
have,
you go. That was Leisure Suit Larry. I played that like crazy.
We could, we could
to
have
admit that.
You can have your own game.
I will say this. There's something that's... And we'll save this for a part two of this podcast, because there's a part of my life that a lot of people don't know about. And if I did write a book about anything, it wouldn't be games. It'd be about this. I was a valet driver in Las Vegas, Nevada. And you want to talk about stories. You want to talk about every night being like wild. That's the book. That's the book that I would write. So
there's the podcast, you guys.
Yeah, there's your
after dark with Ark.
There's the spoiler for part two. But yeah, so we already shouted out Cogs. I will say this: I think that if anybody has any interest at all about like digital items, saving your skins, like holding on to something that could be valuable one day because it's digital and not physical, I say hop on this train. Go register. Go to Cogs. Or wax.cogs.gg, and if you are a part of it, I would really appreciate it. The other thing, follow Protag Studios on Twitter. That's where Anthony's company. That's where I work every day. Most of my time gets sent there. Let me see if I can find it real quick. At Protag Games. That is Anthony Castoro's new company in San Diego, and he hired a lot of really talented people. So if you just give that
boom,
a follow,
you guys got a new follower.
Nice.
Let's go.
You can follow along with this company's new start, and I have a really good feeling that this company is gonna, you know, do pretty well. So
I haven't thrown that out there in a podcast to anybody ever yet. But do you think if I ask Anthony to come in here, we can get him to talk about some stuff?
Oh, maybe. Here's the thing about Anthony. He's busy. He's a busy guy.
I'm not a busy guy. He's going to be too busy, you know, even though he would want to. I'm just a measly game developer.
I would ask him like in a couple months, because he's super busy.
I'll put him on the list. We have
daily meetings, you know, because we're all working from home. We have daily meetings and we say our update of what we're doing for the day. And he literally goes, I'm busy. And then they go, okay, thank you, Anthony. They go on to the next person. Because, you know, he's setting, you got to think about it. Try to imagine, this is like, he's on another level that I respect him so much, because I'm just a game developer. I just work on games. He's like starting companies and like managing, hiring people and like going through legal and just like all of like the worst things that I could imagine trying to do. So he's like a real adult. I'm like a wannabe adult.
That's like the best analogy. He's a real adult. I'm in playtime right now.
Yeah, you know? That's basically.
So, but so we will have all that information, you guys, down in the description. We even have you know, Ark's Twitter in there. You guys don't harass him. You guys should be following him and saying, you know what? I never knew. And I firmly 100% apologize for being an asshole.
Oh, so. No harm, no foul, man. So. Nobody physically hurt me, only mentally. You know, it's fine. I'll only have to go through therapy.
Baby, I'm going to pay for one therapy session.
So. No, it's all good, man.
But I thank you. It was an honor, and I'm glad that you chose to come on in our little slice of the podcast world.
Yeah, and thank you for being part of one of the games that changed my way of playing games and stuff.
Are you crying right now, Blaze? Because it sounds like you're crying.
I kind of am. You know, when I really almost started crying, it's when I visited Daybreak Studios, and
we didn't let him in.
No, you did. I was there with American Dad. I was there with some other awesome people. We had so much fun. And I remember that Greg Henniger told me, like, Blaze, did you know, like, they showed the screens where you guys had, like, streams up from people. And he told me, like, Blaze, your stream is up there sometimes. Sometimes we're watching you. I was like, nah, come on, man. I'm nobody compared to others. And he was like, no, your stream's up there sometimes. I was like, oh, damn, man. I made it.
That's true. Shout out to Greg Henniger. I miss that guy. I think he's working at Amazon.
Yeah, he's working at Amazon. I worked on a few things with him, yeah, which I can't talk about.
You should get him on this podcast.
He's at some point maybe probably coming, but he's very busy at the moment.
This is what you tell Greg. You say, I got Clegg, and Clegg said yes, and you said no, and then he'll feel bad.
I'll just send him the clip of this.
Listen to this podcast.
Now he's never going to talk to me ever again. Yeah, I can already see the message. He's like, I can't believe you did that.
Great. Now I have to. He went 80-something minutes. Now I got to go 90, you know. So, we'll see who's up. So.
Thank you for being here, man. I really enjoyed it, and I'm really happy I could listen to part of your story.
Yeah, that's the
Cliff
Notes
version. Get to know more behind the person.
Yeah, well, when your guys' podcast is big and huge, and you need another guest again, just let me know.
You are more than welcome to come on at any time.
Yeah, man, anytime.
So, you could be like
season two incoming.
I think this podcast is going to cover all the remaining episodes for season one. So, Which is fine, because like I said, that's why I like the premise behind this, is letting someone tell their story. Because now you people out there didn't know the whole story, and you got the Cliff Note version. But, you know, once again, thank you to everybody that's listened to the podcast. You guys go show a support and appreciation for Ark and everything he's done. Everything in the description, you guys, please go check out COG's register, and make sure you guys are following Pro Tag Games. And our little catchphrase that we're working on, you guys keep going out there and gaming, because if you ain't fragging,
you're lagging.
Mom! 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 Get the camera! I gotta kill! Mom, I gotta kill! Oh yeah, baby! Oh, mommy, I gotta kill! Finally, after 250 games sitting in a corner, I'm dying to the gas!